with coverage inspection theorems, and the original idea was to address recent corollaries of the coverage inspector theorem, of which the so-called free will theorem by Conway and Coachin is one. But I announced the title in the abstract before I actually studied their paper. And when I did so, it struck me that their result was actually known. And in fact, it has been in the literature for over 25 years. And so I dropped that part of the talk, all for the benefit of the coherence, I think, since I'll now have more time to address more recent corollaries of Coachin Specker that fits well within to the theme of this workshop. See, the Conway-Coachin theorem, despite the mathematical pedigree of its authors, it contains no mathematics, let alone logic. It's basically a physical argument. And I'm not sorry to drop it. But for those who are interested, the Conway-Coachin theorem is due to Haywood and Redhead in 1982 and was streamlined and simplified by a number of people, including Alan Stairs and also Harvey Brown, Rob Clifton. All right. So whatever is new in this talk is based on an ongoing collaboration with Chris Heunen, who was my PhD student over the last 4 years, and Bas Spitter, who is a postdoc. And since there's a huge delegation here from Oxford, it may be worth mentioning that Chris Heunen will be a postdoc at the Computer Laboratory in Oxford from September onwards. And you have to be careful. I mean, he's very smart. He has great knowledge of Dagger compact categories. And whereas I habitually wear ties for talks, he has a black belt in karate. So, all right. But be nice to him in any case. So let me introduce the question that is answered by the Coachin-Specker theorem by explaining the classical situation that motivates the theorem. So you're familiar with the notion of a Borel space or a Borel algebra. You have a set X, which in classical physics you could say is the phase space of the system that won't play a role here. Then you have the power set P of X, of subsets of X, seen as a Boolean algebra or as a Boolean lattice for the purpose of this talk. And then a Borel space or a Borel algebra will be a Boolean sublattice of P of X that is countably complete, which means that you cannot just form finite meets and joins that can form countably many. And wherever you'll see the letter sigma in this talk, that stands for something valid for countable sets. Okay, now a probability measure, I'll define in a way that you won't find in analysis books, but which is appropriate to this meeting, I think. So you could regard the closed interval 0, 1 as a Boolean lattice in the natural way. So it inherits the ordering of the real numbers. And under that ordering, this happens to be a Boolean lattice in the obvious way. So the meet and the join are the infimum and the supremum. And the orthocomplementation is simply x is sent to 1 minus x. And then a probability measure is nothing but a morphism of Boolean algebras with the additional property that the morphism property extends to countable suprema as opposed to just finite. Then you have special probability measures labeled by the points of X, which physicists would call Dirac measures, or point measures. So for any point, small x of the set X, you have such a Boolean map, namely a subset U in sigma of X is sent to 1 if the point X lies in U and is sent to 0 otherwise. So these are special maps, and from a convexity point of view, such maps and such measures are precisely the extremal points of the convex compact set of all probability measures. Okay, so this is the classical situation that there's no question to be asked, I think. Or are there any questions? I think that this is understood. Now, in quantum mechanics, as you know, you replace the set X by Hilbert space H, and then the quantum analog of the Boolean lattice of measurable subsets of X, as proposed by von Neumann, would be the lattice of closed linear subspaces of Hilbert space. And as you know, this lattice is not Boolean, but has a weaker property called orthomodularity, which I will neither use nor define, except by saying that it's not Boolean.
And throughout this talk, it's convenient to work, instead of with closed linear subspaces of a Hilbert space H, to work with the corresponding projections. So you know there's a bijective correspondence between projections on H, which are linear maps from H to H that are self-adjoint and idempotent. And the ordering, the natural ordering of subspaces, which is by inclusion, is turned algebraically into the ordering that you say that the projection is dominated P less or equal than Q if P, Q equals P. Now, then in an attempt to repeat this story, you could argue that a unit vector psi in Hilbert space defines a map from this lattice P of H, from the projection lattice on the Hilbert space, into the closed interval 0, 1, by simply sandwiching the projection between the state psi. And this map has an interesting property. You cannot say that it's a Boolean map, because the left hand, the domain P of H, is not Boolean, but it is locally Boolean, in the sense that on any Boolean sublattice of P of H, it is a morphism of Boolean algebras. And it even has this sigma, this countable property. Now, you can extend this from unit vectors to density operators. So if you have a density operator, a row, you can diagonalize it in terms of weights, probabilities, lambda I, and a sequence of unit vectors, psi I. And then this map, which is the natural way of extending a map like that, has the same property of being locally sigma Boolean, as I call it. Okay, now the natural question, if you compare this situation with this one, is that in the classical case, there are specific, very special maps, delta x, that don't take values in the entire closed unit interval 0, 1, but only in its extreme points, 0 and 1. And so the question in quantum mechanics is, are there any locally sigma Boolean maps from the projection lattice on H into just the point sets consisting of 0 and 1? And in physics, this question is motivated by hidden variable ideas, which I will not go into very much. So that's the question suggested by the classical situation. If you were to start with density matrices, you might hope that pure states are of this nature, but as you know, they are not. This map actually does take values in the whole closed interval. Now, this question was answered basically already by Gleason, so I'll recall Gleason's theorem. You're undoubtedly familiar with it. So if the dimension of Hilbert space is greater than 2, then each locally sigma Boolean map, which again means that when restricted to Boolean sublattices of P of H, it is Boolean if we regard the closed zero interval, closed interval 0, 1 as a Boolean lattice itself, is given in the way already stated. These maps are necessarily given by density matrices. And it is an immediate corollary of the Gleason theorem that there are no locally sigma Boolean maps taking values in just 0 and 1. And you can just scan for any row, for any density matrix row, you can find projections such that this map actually takes values in intermediate points. Now, the Cochin-Speckler theorem is this corollary. So the statement of the Cochin-Speckler theorem is that there is no locally sigma Boolean map taking values in 0, 1. And the technical progress in stating Cochin-Speckler separately is firstly that it's, in a way, a neater statement than the Gleason theorem. And also, its proof is much simpler. So there's a whole industry of proving the Cochin-Speckler theorem, and I'll just indicate the nature of the proofs. Firstly, as already noted by Gleason, everything follows from the situation R3. So if you take the real three-dimensional Hilbert space R3, then Cochin-Speckler is valid in that Hilbert space, if and only if it's valid in arbitrary Hilbert spaces of arbitrary dimension over the complex numbers dimension greater than 2. And so the idea is that the property of local Booleanness implies that if you have three orthogonal one-dimensional projections P, Q, and R adding up to 1, then local Booleanness implies that the map V asked for can only take the following triples of values. So one of these projections has to be sent to 1, and the other two has to be sent to 0. And then there is a combinatorial game. You identify these three orthogonal one-dimensional projections with orthogonal systems of axes. And then the whole point is that a given axis can be part of different orthogonal systems. And you cannot consistently assign values to a given axis being part of different systems. And so, as I said, there's a whole industry of finding the most spectacular choices of orthogonal systems to make the proof work. And so Cochin and Specker initiated this industry. Penrose contributed with the most efficient system due to Asher Peres. And this would take half an hour to explain, but it's a very elegant type of proof. And if you teach classes in quantum mechanics, then you should certainly include this in first year courses, I think. But in any case, that's the original Cochin-Specker theorem phrased in a slightly quantum logical way. And its proof is elementary. Okay, so the next step that then took 30 years was the role of Topov's theory. And unfortunately, Andreas already gave a talk on this topic yesterday. And I would say it's no accident that Topov's theory entered physics in the context of the Cochin-Specker theorem, since I think whatever its promises for quantum gravity, I would say still the most important application of Topov's theory to physics has been in improving our understanding of the Cochin-Specker situation. And that's what I will emphasize in this talk. So my notation throughout this talk, which I might even write on the blackboard, or you may keep it in mind, I'll repeat it occasionally. So P of H is the lattice of projections on H, which you could either see as closed linear subspaces or projections. And then C of H will be the poset, the partially ordered set of Boolean sublattices of P of H. And these are ordered by inclusion, so in the natural way. So any Boolean sublattice is specifically a subset of P of H, and that gives an ordering, and that is the ordering defining C of H as a poset. And C stands for classical or commutative, whatever you like. I couldn't use B of H for Boolean, since later on I will use B for bounded. So B of H is the algebra of bounded operators in Hilbert space, and it's not C of H. Okay, now there's some technical comment for those interested in operator algebras that I'd like to make now, and which I will return to near the end. There's a sort of complementarity between what you want in logic and what you want in operator algebra theory. I think from a logical point of view, this C of H is what it is. It's a poset of Boolean sublattices of the orthomodular P of H. Now, that doesn't correspond to natural conditions in operator algebras. So the projections of which a given element of C of H consists generate an operator algebra, an algebra of bounded operators on Hilbert space, which will be commutative in given the Booleanness of this sublattice. But it depends on what you mean by generating a subalgebra. And so you could argue, as a von Neumann did, that the algebra generated by the projections making up this Boolean sublattice has to be weakly closed or strongly closed. And then you get a rather unnatural condition on the corresponding Boolean sublattices, namely that its stone spectrum is what is called hyperstonian. That's a condition natural in operator algebra, but in logic it is extremely strange. On the other hand, if you just insist that you allow any Boolean sublattice without conditions, then the class of C star algebras that this corresponds to is called spectral, and you won't even have heard of this class. So whatever condition is natural to impose on commutative operator algebras is rather unnatural in logic. And this is a situation we have to live with, and especially the choice of von Neumann algebras is strange from a logical point of view. Now, let's therefore just do what is natural in logic, just allow any Boolean sublattice. And then, as Andreas explained, you can form the topos of contravariant functors from this poset C of H into sets, where you have to regard this poset as a category. This meeting is about categories. So as you know, any poset defines a category where there's a unique arrow from P to Q. If P is less or equal to Q, and otherwise there is no arrow. And then you can form functors, and especially contravariant functors, and this category will be a topos. So like Andreas, I will not give the definition of a topos, I will just have various examples of topoi, and we'll make the point that the topos is a generalization of the category of sets, which has the property that you can reason logically and mathematically within the topos in the way you're familiar with from set theory, with the exception that reasoning in the topos has to be constructive, in the sense that you can't use the axiom of choice, except in exceptional circumstances, or the law of excluded middle. So the underlying logic of a topos is intuition. Okay, and this topic is a case in point. Now, one specific functor, so one element of the topos, so to speak, is the point functor from the spokes at C of H to Z. It was called the dual pre-sheaf in the Isham circle. And it's an extremely natural thing to consider. So its argument, its domain is C of H, so its argument is a Boolean sublattice of this projection lattice. And it maps that Boolean sublattice B into the space of its points, as defined in Boolean lattice theory. So a point of Boolean lattice B is a homomorphism of Boolean lattices from B to 0, 1, ordered in the natural way like before. Okay. So this is the most natural functor you can think of, which is not to dismiss its importance. The easier things are, the more powerful. Now, the Cauchy-Specker theorem, as reformulated by Isham and Butterfield, so this was the statement that launched this trend of using topos theory in physics, is that B has no global points, in the sense that there is no arrow from the so-called terminal object in this topos into this functor. And the terminal object in the category of sets, or in the topos of sets, is any singleton set. And that means that there is a unique map from each set into the singleton set. You take any singleton set, that will do. And so any topos, by definition, has a terminal object, which we denote by 1. And then the elements of a set correspond exactly from arrows, so functions in the topos, for arrows from this terminal object into the given set. And similarly, in topos theory, you can define points of elements of a topos, which are generalized sets, as arrows from the terminal object into the given functor, in this case. And so Cauchy-Specker, Isham, Butterfield claim that there are no such points. Now, this has been followed up in various ways, and all these papers were of great inspiration, but we decided to sort of rewrite the story a little bit, and that's what I will explain now, with emphasis on Cauchy-Specker. Are there any questions so far?
I'm not sure how completely elementary or too advanced this has been in the mixed audience, but don't hesitate in any case.
So the goal of what I'm going to tell you from now on is to clarify the logic behind the Cauchy-Specker theorem. So as stated, it's already a theorem about lattice theory, you could say. So there is a logic behind lattice theory, so it's already a statement in logic. But it turns out that you can bring out its logical aspects in a more powerful way. And what I'll do is construct a Heyting algebra in a certain topos. Everything on this sheet I will define and explain. So this is like a conspectus of the remainder of the talk, and don't get scared if there's a term you don't know, because I'll explain. Except elementary English words, but okay, so I'll construct a Heyting algebra in a certain topos with the property that the Cauchy-Specker theorem is equivalent to the statement that this Heyting algebra has no models of the most naive kind, called standard models. So standard models of Heyting algebra are sort of yes-no models. The semantics is either true or false. And this is close to the Butterfield-Isham version of Cauchy-Specker, but it has a different emphasis and it lives in a different topos. Now, there is a complication that this Heyting algebra doesn't live in the topos of sets we learned at school, so to speak, where I use school in the American sense for university. In fact, there was a period in European education where people actually learned set theory at secondary school. This was called new math. And this was inspired by Bourbaki, and that has now been given up. But you learn set theory at school, and this Heyting algebra and its standard models don't live in set theory, they live in this specific topos. Fortunately, this topos that we work in is a sheaf topos, and that means that almost anything taking place in this topos can be translated into set theory. And this is altogether a remarkable aspect of topos theory, that you can pass from what is called internal reasoning, where you really imagine you're inside the topos and you do mathematics in it, to external reasoning, where you translate what's happening in the topos into statements about set theory using classical mathematics. And so this you could do in this case. And so there is an external description of this internal Heiting algebra living in this peculiar topos, which is just a Heiting algebra in sets, in set theory. And then if you make this translation from the internal point of view to the external point of view, it turns out that the Cauchy-Specker theorem is equivalent to the statement that this external Heiting algebra has no Kripke models, all this will be explained, on a certain frame, namely precisely the frame C of H that I used from the beginning. And so you could say, since the goal of this talk would be to present corollaries of Cauchy-Specker, whereas Cauchy-Specker itself already excluded a naive, a true, false, binary semantics for quantum logic, this corollary also excludes a natural class of possible world semantics. Now, on the other hand, as also Andrea stressed, this whole business of translating Cauchy-Specker into topos theoretic statements actually gives a positive twist to it. So Cauchy-Specker was a negative result, something does not exist. And this has now turned into a mixed type of statement, namely there is something, an object, like this Heiting algebra, and it does not have certain properties, namely there are no maps such and such and such. But you can still work with this object created in the context of topos theory. And you can do other things with it than doing what Cauchy-Specker has forbidden us to do. Now, okay, so Heiting algebras, this is a very brief crash course. So this is Heiting. So Heiting was a professor of mathematics at the University of Amsterdam, where also Brouwer was a professor and conceived this intuitionistic view of mathematics. And Heiting could be called a pupil of Brouwer, but he worked much against the spirit of Brouwer. So Brouwer was some sort of a mystic, and Heiting tried to make precise the ideas of intuitionistic mathematics in a logical setting. And strangely enough, although the name of Brouwer sort of pervades logic, or at least intuitionistic logic, Brouwer was against logic, and he thought that his ideas could not be formalized. So he opposed Heiting, in fact. Now, so there's no picture of Brouwer, but there is Heiting. So a Heiting algebra is a distributive lattice, and in the notion of a lattice, I include a top and a bottom element, with an additional map, which is the material implication map of logic, or an internal implication map, with the obvious property you require of material implication. And then Heiting algebras, in fact, codify intuitionistic propositional logic in the sense that whenever you have this material implication map, you can define negation by saying that not X is X implies falsehood. And that negation operation will have the properties of intuitionistic logic. Okay, so I'll give some examples. So Boolean algebras are Heiting algebras. So the classical case, the classical propositional logic is contained in intuitionistic propositional logic, if you like. And the difference in structure is that in a Boolean algebra, the negation or orthocomplementation is part of the given structure, whereas in a Heiting algebra, it's a derived operation. And here you go to the opposite direction. So if you start with the Boolean lattice, you have to define the implication operation to make a Heiting algebra, and that's done in the opposite. Okay, then of more significance for this talk is the notion of a poset P. So if you have any partially ordered set P, which in this language, so if it's related to Heiting algebras, a poset is called a Kripke frame, where the word frame is often used in a different way as well that I avoid. So you have locales and frames. These are closely related things, but that's not the use of the word frame as in Kripke frame. So Kripke frame is specifically what I write down. It's a poset. And then you take the Heiting algebra of upper sets, so upward closed subsets of this poset, and under set theoretic inclusion as the partial order, that turns out to be also a Heiting algebra. Okay, this is a special case of the following third example, which is due to Tarski, namely any topology. So O of X for any topological space means the topology of X, its collection of open subsets. Ordered naturally is also an example of a Heyting algebra. So this was one of the first mathematical observations on Heyting algebras, these form examples. And in fact, this Poisson situation is a special case, since experts in topology will see that the upper sets are precisely what is called the Alexandrov topology on the Poisson. So example two is a special case of example three, and both are special cases of what is called a locale. So a locale, at least in the way I use this term, is a complete distributive lattice, where the, so a complete meaning that arbitrary suprema and hence arbitrary infima exists, not just finitely many. And the distributive law is extended. It has to be valid not only for finitely many subs, but for arbitrary families of suprema. So that's a locale. And all these things are special cases of locales. And a locale is, roughly speaking, the same thing as a complete Heyting algebra, except that the definition is different. So in a locale, what you start with is with this law, whereas in a Heyting algebra, you start with the notion of a material implication. And now, if you have a locale, you can actually define a material implication using the completeness of the lattice, and then this infinite distributivity law is used in proving that the implication satisfies this rule, and also you can go in the opposite direction. So locales and complete Heyting algebras are basically the same, but on the other hand, they're slightly different structures. So in a Heyting algebra, the implication is part of the definition, whereas in a locale, it isn't. But this is the detail. Now, there is an example, and that is really the whole point of this talk, to explain this example, that is not of any form previously considered. It's what I call the Heyting algebra of intuitionistic quantum logic, and it's defined in the following way. So we have a Hilbert space H. We have the C of H, which was the poset of Boolean sublattices of the projection lattice of H. And now we take the maps S from C of H into P of H with the property that S at B is an element of B. So this map, it's like a choice function. It assigns an element of a given Boolean sublattice B of P of H to B. And it has to have a monoticity property. And here there is a bracket that's fallen off. So on the pointwise ordering, this turns out to be a Heyting algebra. And if the Hilbert space is finite dimensional, it's even a complete Heyting algebra, and hence a locale. And so this is truly intuitionistic. It is not Boolean. You can actually derive the negation operation. You can check that the double negation, so not x, is not equal to x for interesting x's. And this is one of the main outcomes of our Topos theoretic work, although this has nothing to do with Topos theory anymore. So in a way, you're familiar with Wittgenstein's ladder. You find the ladder and you reach philosophical insight and you throw the ladder away. And that's how I see Topos theory in a way. So once we have this, you could just start this as the given structure. And if you compare this with the orthomodular lattice P of H as a quantum logic, then this changes the nature of a proposition. So in von Neumann's views on quantum logic, a projection, or its associated closed linear subset, is an elementary proposition. It's a yes-no question. This is more Borean in spirit. So in this case, a given proposition, so if you regard elements of a Heyting algebra as propositions, a given proposition is a whole function. So you could see this as a collection of von Neumann-like propositions labeled by the contexts. So as Andreas already stated, you can see elements of the C of H, or Boolean sublattices, you can see them as classical contexts, which explains the level C. And so this proposition in intuitionistic quantum logic is not a single von Neumann proposition, but it's a family of propositions, in that sense, labeled or indexed by all possible classical contexts. And this Heyting algebra turns out to be extremely natural and pervades our work. Okay, now I'll say very little about model theory. It's the most sort of chapter zero in theory, in model theory, and even you won't find this on books, in books on model theory, because this is rather like logic. But locales, or Heiting algebras, have models, and I only take two classes of interest, the so-called standard models, which are maps of the appropriate nature, simply into 0, 1, seen as the topology of the space with one point. And that's one class, and then you can see that the Heiting algebra defined by a topology indeed has such standard models, namely those indexed by the points of X, at least including those. So if you have a point X, you again have this delta function, or the point measure. And we now see the point measure not as having the domain, a given Borel algebra, but with the topology as its domain. But that's in a way more natural in constructive mathematics. And so any point of X defines a standard model of the locale given by the topology of X. And if X has a technical property called sobriety, so as in being sober, like Bob in previous talk, in which his name was mentioned on every slide. So if X is sober, then there are only such standard models. All standard models correspond to points of X. Okay, then there is a more sort of sophisticated class of models. These are naive true-false models. Kripke models, on the poset set, again called a frame in this terminology, on the frame is a frame or a locale map from the given Heiting algebra sigma to the upper sets, to the Alexandrov topology. So that was the nature of a Heiting algebra given by P. So as I explained, this itself is an example of a Heiting algebra. And so it's a map between Heiting algebras that preserves finite meets and arbitrary joints. And that is called a Kripke model. And I have to make a point for logicians among you. I was quite surprised that this is not well known, but usually the notion of a Kripke model of intuitionistic logic is stated in a vastly different way, using forcing conditions. And that way of stating a Kripke model is actually not a model of the Heiting algebra that I consider, but of a certain underlying logic, which is called geometric propositional logic. And so, if you're familiar with that type of Kripke model, of a propositional logical theory where the model is defined by forcing condition, then that is equivalent to this type of language, which would be called an algebraic model. But this is just a matter of a translation. Okay, so this is a Kripke model. And now, applied to this Heiting algebra of intuitionistic quantum logic, there's a very, very natural class of Kripke models that suggests itself, but that turn out not to be Kripke models, would be Kripke models. Namely, if you look at this again, if you take any unit vector psi in Hilbert space, then you have an associated map that I call delta psi, which maps a given element S of this Heiting algebra into the set of Boolean sublattices of P of H. Remember that the Kripke model takes values in the set of upper sets of its on its frame. So this frame P is now C of H. It's a set of Boolean sublattices of the projection lattice. And so what more natural thing you can write down than saying that a given S is mapped into the set of all B's such that S of B, which is a projection, so a proposition in the sense of a Neumann, is true with probability 1 in the state psi. And so if you like possible world language, this would be the list of world B in which the proposition as B in the sense of a Neumann is true. And so in possible world semantics, you simply identify elements of this poset with possible worlds in which a logical proposition can be true. And this gives a shift in the meaning of the notion of semantics. So in true or false sort of standard semantics, you say that the proposition is true or false. Well, we cannot do this in quantum mechanics, unfortunately, or fortunately. In Kripke semantics, You don't say that a proposition is true or false. You list the world in which it happens to be true. That's really a different idea of meaning. And it would be lovely if that were to apply to quantum theory in this setting, but it doesn't. And this will be one of the consequences of Kirchner-Specker. So, now, the funny thing about Topos theory, as I stressed, is that you can do a lot of mathematics that you learned at school also in the topos. So most things you can do in sets, you can also do in a given topos. And this notion of a model, of a standard model and a critical model, is a case in point. You can write this down in such a way that it applies to topos theory. And also the notion of a Heyting algebra itself and the locale can be defined internally in topos theory. So that's good. And so we now change the scene. So the previous slides were in set theory, but I now try to write down similar things in a specific topos. And this is the topos of sheaves on C of H. So C of H is a Poe set, so it was the Poe set of Boolean sublattices of the projection lattice on Hilbert space. It carries a natural topology, it's Alexandrov topology, which consists of the upper sets. And hence it comes with a topos of sheaves. And the sheaves, the sheaf topos, turns out to be isomorphic with something that's much easier to write down, namely the topos of covariant functors from this Poe set to sets. And so this is a change of direction in many ways compared to Butterfield, Eichen, and Döring. So they tend to work with topos of contravariant functors. And this change of emphasis also changes the nature of the mathematics. So whereas Eichen and his collaborators would work with, say, spaces, we would work with the topologies on these spaces as the basic notions. And it turns out that in constructive mathematics, that is a more powerful point of view. And so that applies here as well. Now, there is a specific functor that you could call the tautological functor, the easiest functor to write down altogether in this topos. Namely, I take a Boolean sublattice B of the projection lattice on Hilbert space, and I map it into itself. Whereas there should have been perhaps a change of type forms, because this B is seen as an element of the Poe set C of H of Boolean sublattices, whereas the right-hand side is B itself, considered as a set. So the left-hand side, the argument, is B seen as a point in the Poe set C of H, and the result is B seen as itself, as the Boolean lattice that it is, as a set. So it's a tautological functor. And this turns out to be an internal Boolean lattice in the sheaf topos of interest. So also the notion of a Boolean lattice you can internalize. You can say within the topos what it means for something to be an internal lattice, what it means to be a Boolean lattice, and this is an example. Okay, now you can define the notion of a stone spectrum in set theory, and you can do something similar here, but in a topological way. So in set theory, the stone spectrum of a Boolean lattice will consist of, as I said, I think, the Boolean maps from the Boolean lattice B into 0, 1. And that comes with the natural topology. And then the stone theorem is that B is isomorphic through an injection of the sub lattice of Clopen subsets of point B in this topology. Now, in constructive mathematics and in topos theory, you don't want to work with the stone space point B itself, but with its topology. And this you can internalize. So instead of working with the stone spectrum itself, we work with its topology. And that has certain properties which you can translate into topos theory. And the property that translates is that the topology of the stone spectrum of B is actually isomorphic to what is called the ideal completion of B. That's a very natural operation in Heyting algebra or locale theory. And this you can internalize, and therefore you can speak of the stone spectrum of this internal Boolean lattice. And that is a specific functor. So that this you can compute. This is a sort of computation that you can do in topos theory. And it turns out that this internal stone spectrum of the internal Boolean projection methods, is very closely related. You could say it is this intuitionistic quantum logic Heyting algebra that I gave you, but regard it as a functor in a certain way that I won't detail, but which is on the slide. So I wrote you what was in red was a Heyting algebra in set theory simply. And you can give it a certain twist so that it actually becomes a functor, and as such it will be the internal Stone spectrum of this projection lattice. Okay, so you have an internal Heyting algebra in sheaf topos, and you can study its models. You can study its critical models or its standard models. And also the notion of a standard model, which in set theory would be just a map into 0, 1, becomes a map into what is called the sub-object classifier of the topos, usually written as omega. So the true false semantics in set theory, 0, 1, translates into topos theory as a semantics taking values in what is called the sub-object classifier, which Andreas might have called the truth object. It's a carrier of truth values of propositions. And so one of the attractive features of using topos theory, as Andreas also stressed, is that in quantum mechanics, we cannot only have naive binary truth value 0, 1, true, false. You have to have something broader. And topos theory gives candidates for truth objects, absorbing truth values in the nature of these sub-object classifier. And you can study these standard models. Okay. Now I have to slightly hurry up, I think, although I believe I started a few minutes late, but I'll draw this to a conclusion as soon as possible. The whole point now is that there are bijective correspondences between the standard models of this internal Stone spectrum of the internal projection lattice in the topos of sheaves on C of A, and Kripke models in sets of our Heyting algebra of intuitionistic quantum logic. So there are two ways to look at this. You could start with the notion of a Heyting algebra as I wrote down and argue about it and do quantum logic in set theory. And then you have, I think, an improvement of quantum logic. Or you take the topos theoretic approach where you actually derive this Heyting algebra as a specific Stone spectrum of a natural object, namely this internal projection lattice. And so there is a correspondence between these two and between the locally Boolean maps from P of H into 0, 1 that, according to Cauchy and Sprecher, do not exist. So I will omit the proof. The proof is let's say, a straightforward argument in topos theory. But I will warn you now that this sounds nice, but may be completely empty, since the Cauchy and Sprecher theorem translated into topos theory actually states that none of these three objects exist. So Cauchy and Sprecher said that there are no locally Boolean maps P of H taking binary values. And this turns out to be equivalent to the non-existence of this Stone spectrum and to the standard models of this Stone spectrum. And that in turn is equivalent to the non-existence of Kripke models of the external version of the framing set. So this is very sad. And I was reminded, having proceeded in this part of preparing the talk, I once attended a talk by one of the most senior staff members of this Perimeter Institute, whose name I will not mention in view of the nature of this anecdote. But he gave a talk, which I thought was very good. And then a guy called Ted Jacobson stood up. Some of you may know him. And he said, you know, Lee, this talk was really completely empty. And so there's this threat to my talk as well, that this has been completely empty, because what I've done is shown that the zero, the empty set, is isomorphic to the empty set. I've given three classes of objects. I've shown you that they're isomorphic, but they're all empty. So fortunately, this is not the situation. You can boost this up and have exactly the same type of reasoning with a non-empty result. And this is the final thing I'd like to tell you. So if you replace in Hilbert space, or more precisely, if you replace the bounded operators on the Hilbert space by an arbitrary C star algebra, arbitrary operator algebra acting on H, or not even acting on H, seen abstractly, If you replace this post set of Boolean sublattices of the projection lattice of H by the post set of unital commutative C star subalgebras of H, and if you replace the sheaf topos on C of H by the sheaf topos on C of A, what you have is then the topos of covariant functors from this post set CA into sets. Then you replace the internal Boolean lattice, which was really the internalization of the projection lattice of the Neumann, by an internal commutative C star algebra, which is given by the same tautological definition, namely, you have an argument C, seen as an element of the poset of commutative subalgebras of A, and you map it into itself, seen as a set. So it's the same idea. If you then replace the Stone spectrum, which was the ideal completion of the internal Boolean lattice P, if you replace it by the internal Galfond spectrum of this internal commutative C star algebra, then you get a non-empty situation, and that's my last slide. So this no is an answer to the threat. So the threat has been cancelled. So then you actually get a very similar theorem, but now with non-empty carrier, so to speak. There is a bijective correspondence between the standard models of the Galfond spectrum of A in the sheaf topos in which we do quantum theory, the Kripke models of our Heiting algebra of intuitionistic quantum logic, just in sets, Kripke models carried by the poset C of A as a frame, and valuations in the sense of Cochin and Specker, namely maps from the self-adjoint part of the C star algebra A to R, that are linear and multiplicative on any commutative C star subalgebra. And so you recover the Cochin and Specker situation as a special case, namely where you take the bounded operators on the Hilbert space. But for arbitrary C star algebras, all these classes will be non-empty and in fact will be extremely interesting. So on that note, since the chairman has stood up, I'll close. Thank you.
Question. If that's not the case, let's ask it again.